Today's show is brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, sharing nothing but the best in whole grain nutrition and committed to their mission of good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
My name is Hannah Forden. I'm the membership coordinator at Heritage Radio Network, but even before I joined the team, I loved listening to HRN during my subway commute. It made the time go quickly and left me feeling inspired for the day ahead. HRN listeners tune in from all over the world, but there are a few traits that we all have in common, no matter where we listen from: a curious palate, the fierceness to make a difference, and a hunger for lifelong learning about the culinary world. As you know, Heritage Radio Network is a listener-supported nonprofit. To deliver the most ambitious, entertaining, and of-the-moment stories in 2018, we need your help. We need to raise $150,000 by December 31st to accomplish these goals and to keep your favorite shows on the air. Together, we can make this HRN's most exciting, impactful, and delicious year yet. No matter how much you choose to give, you'll feel awesome next time you tune in, knowing that we wouldn't be here without you. Become a member by donating today. Join us at heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and you'll immediately start enjoying benefits such as VIP invitations to HRN events, where you will mix and mingle with your favorite hosts. Plus, we have great member swag. Show off your HRN pride with a t-shirt, or keep your hands safe in the kitchen with an HRN pot holder. Memberships also make a perfect holiday gift for all the foodies in your life. This year, why not give the gift of food radio? You'll hear your generosity in action for the year to come. Help keep our lights on and our mics hot by pledging your support today at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Caitlin, it's good to see you briefly.
You're going to see me for about a minute.
Why? And why is that?
Because we still don't have any heat. And
I know.
I'm grabbing the kids and going back to the hotel.
It's so sad for me. I've been home working all day today because I thought we were going to get our furnace repaired. The piece didn't come in. So it's like the Fortress of Solitude.
It is so cold in here.
I'm like
actually
Superman
don't know.
Superman at the Fortress of Solitude, but without the superpowers. So I'm actually fully, I'm dressed like I'm camping.
Without heat, with no campfire.
In our house. I'm staying. I'm not leaving. I don't care if the part doesn't come. I'm going down with the ship.
You are insane.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, so who are we talking to today? You seemed, when you came home from this interview,
Yeah. You
were super stoked.
I was. So on today's show, we have one of the most well-known chefs on the planet, I can safely say, Massimo Bottura, who, I mean, what do you say about this guy? He is the chef, L'Osteria Francescana, and that restaurant, for several years on the 50 best list, was number one in the world. He's currently number two on that list. We didn't do really a biographical interview because he's so well known, and he's also one of the chefs who's been portrayed on Chef's Table, the Netflix series, which I imagine a lot of people who listen to the show know. He's also, to be totally honest about it, was in New York and on the show, really, because he's promoting a new book, which is called Bread is Gold, Extraordinary Meals with Ordinary Ingredients. And just to quickly orient our listeners, the idea behind the book is that in 2015, Massimo, at the Milan Expo, created what is called, my Italian is terrible, but Refettorio Ambrosiano. And a refettorio doesn't quite mean soup kitchen, but that's how it's been described in print. We get into what exactly it does mean in the interview. But what they did was they created this venue. The theme of the Milan Expo was Feed the Planet. And what Massimo believed was, if you were going to really take that theme seriously, let's take it seriously. And he devoted himself to using food that normally goes wasted, food that is totally usable, but because so many of us in the quote-unquote first world are spoiled by the quality of the ingredients we have at our disposal, they can't sell a lot of this stuff if it's just slightly imperfect. But it's totally edible, totally safe. And he brought 65 of the top chefs from around the world, cycled them, they came to the space, and they whatever was delivered to them that day from supermarkets and wherever else, they improvised meals using this food. And the idea behind the book is that, first of all, all the menus are captured with the recipes from these world-renowned chefs, but you can also learn a lot about how to use slightly past date, not expired, but just slightly past its prime stuff in a delicious way. Isn't that a cool idea?
The book is also beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's not fussily beautiful. It's very naturally beautiful. And that's it. So Massimo and I met. I had never met him before. I have to say I was utterly, as excited as I was to meet him, and to be totally honest, I was a little nervous to meet him. It's rare that that happens for me, but he's such a huge guy. And, you know, it's never, well, maybe sometimes it is, ideal to meet someone for the first time 5 seconds before you're going to do an interview. So I was a little nervous about meeting him. I wasn't 1,000% sure how to do the interview because his biography is so well known. And he walks in the room and we shake hands. And like within 2 seconds, I felt like I knew the guy. I think it was mutual. He was very kind to me at the end of the interview. And we just clicked and we jumped right in. And I think we had a great conversation. We don't totally talk about nothing but the book because, as usual, we went off on some tangents and we did get into certain parts of his biography. So please don't feel like you're about to step into a 1 hour infomercial. It is not that at all. It's a really entertaining interview with a super high energy, entertaining, brilliant person who I love talking to. I also have to quickly say a quick thanks. I had never met anybody, amazingly, at this point in my career from Fiden, and Meg Parsent and Kate Greenberg, who do the PR over there, there may be other people who do that, were both responsible for bringing Stephen Harris to my door, or I should say bringing me to Stephen Harris's door a few weeks ago, and then this week bringing Massimo Bottura to me, and by extension to all of you listening to this. This interview was conducted in one of, I think it's called the Caroline Room, which is one of the sort of meeting rooms at the Nomad Hotel, who were nice enough to let us use the space. And that's it. I hope you guys enjoy it. Caitlin, you can head off to the Marriott Courtyard around the corner.
I'll leave you to the frozen tundra, Andrew, and I'll see you tomorrow.
And the rest of you, here you go. My interview with the great Massimo Bottura. I hope you enjoy it. So how long have you been in New York City?
A few hours.
Did you just
landed? Just landed yesterday. We had a fantastic dinner, yeah. as usual.
Yes.
As I always say, like New York right now, I think is the most interesting place in the world.
Really?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because it's an incredible multicultural place.
Yeah.
In which you have so many different chefs and ethnic all together in the same street. And so you can choose whatever you want, whatever yes. you feel in any hour you want to do. And there's no other place in the world that are putting together so much. London was like this like three, four years ago. But right. then there was something missing because all the best chefs, they were opening and then they closed and they left. There's something right. wrong about Europe.
It lost a little bit of its spirit.
Yeah, yes.
Do you, first of all, I have to ask you, I did not realize until I was getting ready to speak to you that you came and cooked in New York City.
Yeah, 1993.
Early in your career. Yeah, yes. What made you do that to come from Italy and more broadly Europe? What made you come to New York at that time?
I'm always bored of things. And, it was 6 years that I was in this trattoria outside of Modena. And I really want to explore more, you know. And one of my major passion was music. And I'm always been attracted by New York since the first year I came here, like in 1980. I always seen New York as something special, something incredibly, in which you could compress all my favorite passion, like food, music, art. There's everything here, So I was attracted by that. I said, okay, I'm gonna take one year off. I'm gonna go to New York, enjoy traveling around, buy an Harley Davidson and drive down to Florida and pass through the Blue Ridge Mountains, or going to Phoenix and drive to the Grand Canyon, camping on the Colorado, it's like this, it's like something I always want to do it, you know, and I did it.
Yeah,
that was.
How long were you here altogether?
1 year, almost one year. Then after like 3 months that I was driving around, going here, going there, I was walking down downtown Grand and Mercer, and I walk into this I saw this sign, like the Italian brand of coffee. I said, oh, I would die for an espresso. That was before Starbucks. I walk in, and it took like 20 minutes to have an espresso, and I said, maybe they need some help here.
Right.
The space was beautiful, was really well designed. So I applied for a job, and I said, I can help you if you want me to. And I went back home. I was living at 76 and Central Park West.
Yeah.
The small apartment. And, on the answer machine, there was Ray Costantini saying, if you can come tomorrow, yeah, it would be great. So I went there the day after.
Yeah.
And where I met Lara.
Yeah.
The same day, she applied for a job, and she walked in into the Café di Nonna the same day, the same hour.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Do you believe in fate? That seems like fate.
Yeah, that's
too big a coincidence, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So when you come back here, do you feel, does this feel a little bit like home? Amount of time.
I feel it's the only place in the world, except for Modena, that I feel home.
You do?
Yeah. I just sent a message to Will and Daniel Hamm, because yesterday night we landed, and we were having, we are staying at the Nomad Hotel since my in-laws, they move out of New York.
Yeah.
And, Will show up and, he make us, space in a Nomad restaurant. And we had tagliolini with white truffle, Brunello di Montalcino, and roasted chicken. I said, my God, this is home. Yeah. I feel home.
Yeah.
This is what I really felt yesterday night. And I was saying the same word that you were talking just 1 minute ago, writing a thanks note to them.
That's great. I feel a little bit of sympathy for the cook who had to make the pasta for you in the kitchen.
I went down in the kitchen just to say that was the first time. I don't remember the last time. Maybe it was not, but maybe to me it was the first time that I had pasta outside of Italy.
You usually don't order pasta anywhere else.
Right?
Most of chef people I know who are chefs who are either Italian or who trained in Italy, they eat in Italy, their own restaurant, and that's it for pasta.
That's it.
So can we, I need to ask you this. We're just talking about New York. You seem with this book, it seems like you're on a mission. Are you on a mission?
No, I don't think so.
No. How would you describe how this fits into your life right now?
There are so many things in my life right now that, like we just bought this country space in which we are like rebuilding we're gonna build some rooms. We're like into this social project to involve all these disabled kids to make tortellini, to transfer the knowledge from the grandmother to these special kids, But this is one of our projects, It's something that comes out naturally. Because once you have culture, knowledge, consciousness, the sense of responsibility is there.
Yes.
So once you have to confront the Universal Exposition team 2 years ago, feed the planet. Right. Feed the planet.
We should say for people listening, this was the Milan Expo.
Yeah, the Milan.
The theme was
Universal Exposition.
Yes,
you know?
And the theme.
The theme was feed the planet, energy for life.
Yeah.
You cannot think about that and show how good all these people are, or the production or the future. You know, first of all, you have to check the number. You know, you have to get deep into that team. And the team and the numbers at that time were like 860 million people are in need.
Yes.
In the world.
Need
860 million.
Need,
you know,
you're
they
talking
don't have
just
anything
food.
to eat.
Yes.
And 1.3 billion tons of food are wasted every year, 33% of the production. So we don't need to produce more. We need to waste less.
Right.
So that was the point. So at that point, we decide to feed the planet in our own way.
Yeah.
And to do this, I need all the chef, their creativity, their time, to show the world that what the people think is waste,
right,
for us are just opportunity. Yeah. For us are just ordinary ingredients. You know, on the title of the book, they're like 165 extraordinary recipe with ordinary ingredients.
Yes.
Because this is exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, we collect, ingredients from Expo, from supermarkets, and we were cooking for people in need.
Yeah.
And, through our knowledge, our creativity, we did something amazing.
Yes.
But our goal was fighting waste.
Mm-hmm.
Second, transfer the knowledge, our knowledge, to the volunteers. Third, communicate this project to the world.
Yes.
This is a cultural project. It is not a charity project.
Mm-hmm.
Because, the charity aspect, it's for the volunteers, the real heroes. They are there every day, They
right.
are in London, in Modena, in Bologna, in Rio de Janeiro, every day, working,
yes.
serving. These are the real heroes. We are the cultural part of the project, as the architect, as the volunteers, as the designers, because we need everyone who has a creativity and sensibility to create beautiful space. Because our goal is to rebuild the dignity of the people,
mm-hmm.
to fight waste, to at the end also to feed the people in need.
Yeah. Well, this seems to me like the ultimate. There's that old line. I don't know what language it originated in, but give someone a fish, you feed them for a day, teach them to fish, you feed them for their life, right?
Fantastic.
This is the ultimate expression of that, right?
It is
your role in it. This book
and
the sort of information that you're trying to disseminate is empowering people to make better use of food.
But listen, I said, and I'm not exaggerating, this is the most important book of the last 30 years. Because, first of all, there are 65 of the most influential chefs in the world in there.
Yes.
They are teaching you how to cook with the normal ingredient you have in your home.
Yes.
You know, they show you, they make you visible the invisible.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a phrase you use in the book.
Yes.
What do you mean by that? Make the invisible visible.
For many people, if you have breadcrumbs, you don't know what to do. If you have a brown banana, you throw it out.
Yes.
If you have a overripe tomato, it's overripe.
Yeah.
You don't know that we are waiting overripe tomato to create tomato sauce for spaghetti. So it's like, this is visible
right.
for us. is invisible for the people. They're like living the everyday life. They get lost into their everyday life.
Yes.
And you need better. Because you eat seasonal, you eat better.
This,
and you save money.
Now, I need to ask a question. As somebody who, you know, I've written a number of books that talk about Italian food. I always wonder if it's a cliche that people in other countries, certainly America, have about the Italian mindset of the home cook, right?
Yeah.
What you're talking about seems to me to be intrinsically part of the traditional Italian home cook, that you don't waste food. You're nodding. Is this,
yes.
Is it, you know, you look at overripe tomatoes get used to make soup.
Yes.
Stale
yes.
bread
yes.
becomes
yes.
The foundation of a zuppa di pane.
Yes.
Forget my pronunciation.
Yeah. You point the finger exactly on, for us it's normal.
And also
for
leftovers. Leftovers turn into another dish.
Absolutely.
Leftovers,
absolutely.
Pot roast turns yeah. into a part
this,
of a sauce.
This morning I was cooking and I was showing the pesto of with breadcrumbs instead
yeah.
of pine nuts, no?
To, okay, fine.
The pesto of everything, because we use, we add some thyme, some watercress,
yeah.
and some mint. And all the leftover from another cooking session, you
yeah.
know, like some tomato, some young shave cheese,
yes.
Some onion pickles, or like I did a salad. I made a salad with
yeah.
everything that was left over,
uh-huh.
and the salad. Adding some toasted breadcrumbs, some pesto, adding some water, you know, making a sauce and vinaigrette, something like that. It come out beautiful, beautiful salad.
Yeah.
But this is normal for us.
Right.
You know, I come from a family, we had land, and when the farmers, they were killing the pig,
uh-huh.
They were always saying, you know, it's so important. This is a very spiritual thing, because the pig is giving the life to feed the whole family.
Yeah.
So we have to be respectful,
yeah.
and we have to use every single part of the thing, from the bones for a beautiful broth, warm, that we use in a very cold night in winter, to the pig head,
yeah.
and make an amazing coppa di testa. You know,
yeah.
this is normal. This is the everyday life. So Italian cuisine come from the people,
mm-hmm.
from the families,
yeah.
and, you know, raised as an amazing cuisine,
yes.
very light, very affordable, and then obsessed about the quality of the ingredients.
Yes.
And, you know, this is Italian cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the French, that was completely different. You know, the French cuisine... spread when the noble, you know, after the French Revolution, the
yeah.
noble,
yeah.
They were killed, the chefs, they lost their job, and they start, you know, restaurants.
Yes.
For us, it's different. Italian cuisine comes from the first very important book was Artusi.
Yeah.
Artusi.
The Art of Eating.
He was traveling around Italy.
Yes.
Writing down recipe from
yeah.
the families, putting down in Italian language, testing them home, and then he put like the most important cooking book in Italy.
Yeah.
But comes from the people,
yeah.
you know, from the, you know, the family is a family way of thinking.
Yes.
Then, you know, this kind of mentality mixed with, you know, the DNA that we have, because, you know, we have 2,000 years of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Roman, they switched the Greek philosopher phrase, we eat to live in, we live to eat.
Right.
Because, you know, they understood that around the table, they were like using tables and party to show the power and to put together people
yeah.
and lobbying and create, you know, the things that we all know.
Yes.
But everything happened around the table
yeah.
and in parties, in house. And it's always been like that.
Yeah.
They understood that. And,
it's also,
you know, we have in our gene, in our DNA, that
yeah.
kind of feeling for food.
There's also, well, to that point, the way you just said this feeling for food, it seems to me, and I love French food, but it seems to me like Italian food is fundamentally... And again, I think this flows right into this book. It's It seems to me like it's less concerned with transforming the food.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. There's
fewer steps. The food is not put through all of these transformative. You do this, and then you strain, and then like that's the French way. The Italian way is much more simple.
I feel the four more important cuisine in the world are still French, Chinese, Italian, and Japanese.
Interesting.
The French and the Chinese are very similar, because look at the point from 10 kilometers. Okay, so you see very clear the image of Italian or French and Chinese cuisine, and. You see that, they use a lot of technique. The ingredients are always there, but sauces and spices and things, and they cover everything, you know. Italian and Japanese are obsessed about the quality of the ingredients,
yes.
First of all. Mm-hmm. They touch the ingredients, that little touch that make them, sublime.
Yeah.
And, they're like extremely important for both lightness of the flavors and touch. Using the right technique.
Yeah.
Not for the ego of the chef.
Right.
But to sublime the ingredients. So these are very similar.
Yeah.
And you're totally right when you say that. And that's why, a lot of Japanese are coming in Italy, and they want to learn. And the best Italian cuisine outside of Italy, you eat in Japan.
That's your feeling.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yes.
So, can you tell the role? How do you see these days? You were just talking a few minutes ago about different types of social involvement, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you meant it specifically about chefs these days, but it seems to me that this is a very exciting moment in the history of your profession.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Chefs, I mean, obviously, you don't have to go back that long ago. People couldn't even name a chef, right? 50,
Absolutely.
60 years ago.
Yeah.
That started to
even
change.
Even 20, 25.
You mean in terms of the masses?
Yeah.
Right, sure. Okay. Now there's obviously there's a ton of interest worldwide in the profession. You all have enormous profiles.
Yes.
With that comes a certain amount of power if you want it.
Yes.
It also seems to me, and I've heard other interviews with you, that what you do in your restaurant, yes, you're going to eat it. it's art. At some level, I know a lot of chefs don't like that word.
No, me neither.
You don't.
Because artists are free to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And chefs, they have to cook good food. Like engineer, they have to build amazing fast cars.
Right.
We are artisan, but obsessed about quality.
Right. Okay. And by quality, you mean flavor.
Flavor for me, and quality of technique, engineering technique for the engineer are building Ferraris. You know.
But for you, if flavor is priority one.
Is the most important thing, because first of all, the food has to be good and healthy.
Yeah.
Then there is all the implication of artistic implication.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Picasso was saying, copy yourself is a surreal acting. Stealing from the other, stealing ideas is necessary. So to me, stealing ideas from the artist, getting influenced by Charlie Parker, Billie Holiday, Damien Hirst, or Duchamp, or Ai Weiwei,
I love that you mentioned Duchamp.
Necessary.
Yeah.
It's totally necessary because it's my passion.
Yes.
And to me, as food, I cook for passion. I don't cook for making money. I have one restaurant.
Yes.
And it is in Modena.
Yeah.
Has 28 covers, and we are 60 people working there.
Yeah.
So this is not business.
Yes.
It's a dream. I'm living a dream. Living in a dream. Mm-hmm. Okay. Business is another thing, that when you travel around the world, on the other side of the world, and you cook for the president of Singapore and all the head of states, yes, that's business.
Yes.
But for me, what we do every day in Osteria is dream. And we create culture. It's a laboratory of ideas. Without Osteria Francescana, we could never imagine the Refettorio in Milan, in Rio, in Modena, in Bologna, in London, and next is going to be Paris, and then whatever.
Yeah.
And Bread is Gold is the result of that. You know, it's our dream. This is, once you have culture, knowledge, consciousness, the sense of responsibility is there.
Yes.
And, you know, for me, it's so easy because I grew up in a very social region like Emilia-Romagna.
Yeah.
No, it's a region that it grows like more than Germany, you know, like 9%. But because we are all together, we share things, we get close, you know, like think about how we preserve the balsamic vinegar.
Yeah.
All these small producers, they get together and they get very loud because they are all together in one, speak one old voice.
Yeah.
As we did with Parmigiano Reggiano.
Sure.
So we learned that. And so I said to all my colleague, that I cannot call colleague, all my friends, you know.
You're talking about all the other chefs.
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to be with me. We have to be together. We have to speak one word at the universal exposition. Think about what word. Universal exposition. It's unbelievable. And our project,
yeah.
I want to say our because it's our project. It's not my project.
Yeah.
Became the icon of the universal exposition. The Minister of Agriculture in Italy,
yeah.
He asked me to speak in front of the G7 of the minister and explain the project and what happened, you know, in Milan.
Yeah.
And to show them that, you know, this is very important focus, fighting waste. Think about that. Italy and France, they passed the law against waste.
Yeah.
So a chef in 2017 is much more than the sum of his recipes.
Yeah. So what do you see, to that point, what do you see the different roles as? Advocate? For a chef, what are the, how do you see the
You know,
I don't mean it's an obligation.
When they ask me, but you travel so much, who's cooking? I'm cooking every day. In the meantime, I'm traveling. I'm on the plane and I'm cooking with my mind.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
You know, in Modena, in the restaurant, there are people that are working with me since 14 years, 18 years, 10 years, you know, it's like they're there and they're doing everything, but they confront with me all the time.
Sure.
And with my mental palate,
yes.
I can, you know, cook much and I can be much more helpful than stay close in those four walls.
Yeah.
That is the kitchen of the everyday.
Let's talk for a minute. The book is the story of, and I don't want to mispronounce it.
Refettorio
Ambrosiano.
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 Yeah.
I've seen it translated Refettorio Soup Kitchen. Is that?
Doesn't seem exactly right to me. No, no. It's not a classic soup kitchen. Do we need another soup kitchen? No.
No.
Refettorio is a beautiful, amazing space.
Yeah. The original was a former theater.
Yes.
Yep.
Rebuilt by this group of architects in which even Renzo Piano was involved. And they rebuilt an amazing, amazing space full of beauty because the artists were involved, designer were involved. So it's an amazing, amazing space.
Yes.
In which we were hosting the people.
Yes.
In that at that time there were like a lot of migrants.
Yeah.
They were coming from Syria, and homeless. We were hosting people, and we were serving appetizer, main course,
yes.
dessert.
Yes.
At the table.
Yes.
The table they were like small and long, like very narrow and long, like eight to fit eight people, because I want them to confront each other, being one in front of the other, to create families around the table.
Mm-hmm.
And to give the opportunity to these people to eat in an amazing space full of art, of music, of joy, of beauty, and eat amazing food.
Yeah.
So it's about rebuilding the dignity of the people.
Yes.
this project.
Yeah.
And this is what was that.
And this book, which we'll take a break, and then I'd love to just... But basically, the book tells the story of the first 6 months of the Refertorio.
Yeah.
And
till the Universal Exposition was over.
And you basically go chef by chef and yes. talk about not just their contributions, but you also talk about your interactions with them.
It's beautiful,
and
beautiful.
You really get a sense of the day-to-day life of this place.
Exactly.
And I'd love to just go through maybe a few of those stories after the break, if that's okay.
Just let's go. Absolutely.
So we're going to take a quick break. Yeah. And before we do, just a reminder that you can subscribe to this show on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you subscribe to this show. And as always, if you'd be kind enough to leave a review or even just rate the show, it helps people find us, and we'd always appreciate that. We are talking with the great Massimo Bottura in New York City, and we will be right back after this break. Like a four-leaf clover, shining like a penny bright. Landing on all four feet like a cat who's ready for a wild night. My theme song and break music is from After School Specials album Double Barrel Single Entendre, which is available on iTunes.
Bob Moore is the founder of Bob's Red Mill, top quality supplier of grains, flours, and general nutritional goodness from Oregon. He's talking to us about their signature millstones, a very specific way of making whole grain flour. So what's the secret, Bob?
Follow me to the millroom. Well, these are just like the millstones that the Romans used to grind their grains. In fact, these stones came from the same quarry near Paris, France, where the Romans got their stones. The company that makes our millstones pulls their quartz from the same quarry, and they make mills for us that are just wonderful.
Bob explains how the millstones grind much slower and at cooler temperatures than modern steel rollers. The process keeps the grains cool, preserving the flavor and nutrition.
Look at what they produce. I love how they keep things simple and just right. All the nutrition is there, just like nature intended.
After almost 40 years in the milling business, they're serving up over 400 organic, gluten-free, and whole grain foods right here from the mill in Oregon, sending them off to destinations around the world.
We think we can make a difference by sticking to the traditional way of stone milling. And so, that's what we're doing.
To learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their mission to bring good food for all, visit bobsredmill.com/podcast.
And we are back with Massimo Bottura and talking about the book Bread is Gold, which is currently available from the House of Fiden. So let's talk a little bit about, before we get too specific, what was the day-to-day like at the Refertorio? What time did you go in there? What was the energy like? What was the light? There's a feeling washing over you as I ask you this.
Yeah.
What was it like going there every day?
No, it was, I don't know. I didn't know what to expect, you know, that's for sure. You know, hosting every day a different chef since the beginning, you know, it was insane. But it was so special, even for all my team, you know, they were like volunteering and getting on the train very early in the morning, go to Milan and helped every single chef who was coming. It was unbelievable experience. You know, every day you were like, you know, you were exposed to the food truck that was coming 8:45, 9 o'clock.
And the truck brought you what?
Yeah, everything.
No, but I mean
everything.
The idea of that
everything.
Was it brought, you know, it, brought it
brought food, food
from markets
food.
That was deemed
market
not saleable.
Or a Universal Exposition. I remember one day from the Japanese pavilion.
Yeah,
they arrived with like 80 kilos, like 160 pounds of black cod, you know. They were they didn't use, and frozen black cod. And another time they brought, like, I don't know, this kind of meat from the Nordic, you know, pavilions.
Yes.
Like the reindeer, stuff like that. So it was every single ingredient you can imagine. Like 80 chicken, you know, 80 frozen chicken, you know. Ah, my
God. You didn't
God.
Know what was coming every
no,
day.
No,
and
no,
the
no,
idea,
no, no.
Am I correct? Most of it was food that was deemed not saleable. It wasn't in good
no,
enough.
It was, there was like is it was food that was ready to expire or like
right.
the day after or
right.
you know like you know boxes of ham
yeah.
or Parmigiano Reggiano crust or
right.
grated cheese or you know yogurt or you
so
know,
this was
whatever.
You were seeing firsthand
pasta.
You were seeing firsthand the statistic you mentioned that 33% that
yes.
gets wasted.
Yes.
Every day you were
yes.
seeing that brought
yes.
to life
yes.
in front of you.
10 tons of food.
Was it shocking?
Yeah, it was shocking.
Yeah.
But, you know, after the experience in Rio de Janeiro,
yeah.
you know, in which, you know, 11 trucks full of fruit and vegetables are burned every day in Rio de Janeiro, where 2.5 million are living on the street and they
yeah.
don't have anything to eat, that was shocking.
Yeah.
That was that was insane.
Right.
You know? So it's like, so we were waiting for that.
Yeah.
All the chefs, they were there. Christina.
Who's
me,
Christina?
Christina is the head project of Food for Soul.
Right.
And
she was sort of the manager
she,
of this.
She was the manager of
experiment.
Everything.
Yeah.
She was living in a bed and breakfast in
yeah.
which we were hosting people.
Yes.
And then the chef, they were like spending a couple of days in Milan.
Yes.
See, they were, you know, walking on the Universal Exposition, then come to us and cook. And, you know, they were like opening the truck, unloading the truck. I've seen Ducasse
yeah.
unloading the truck.
Right.
That was...
Well, we have to say, for you, Ducasse...
Ducasse,
you're,
for me,
you're an Italian.
Yeah.
Like Ducasse is your
no.
He's the pinnacle for you.
No, it's Ducasse is the chef I was working 25 years ago.
Yeah,
and I was in the Hotel de Paris at Louis XV in Monte Carlo working for him, and he's always been my mentor.
Yes,
because you know, even if I'm cooking a real Italian, deeply Italian cuisine. The technique and the obsession about the quality they have,
yeah.
I've learned with Ducasse at that time,
yes.
because he was very avant-gardist at that time.
Yeah.
He was switching butter with extra virgin olive oil from the Riviera. He was doing like cooking from the market directly to the pan, all these vegetables.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was very avant-gardist for French cuisine. Ducasse was the one of the first one who said, I want to come.
Yeah.
I want to see what's going on.
Did he
on.
Seem excited by it?
Excited? He was crazy about the project.
Yeah.
He just gave an interview to... No, in his movie, sorry. In his movie,
yeah.
he just said, whenever Massimo is calling me,
yeah.
I'm going to go because
yeah.
I trust him and
right.
I love his project.
Yeah.
And I want to support that.
Right.
So it's like... He gave us, he came, he flew in August to Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah.
As he did in London the second day. In Milan, he decided to cook there the 14th of July.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like La Presa della Bastiglia. You know, it's crazy. You know,
yeah.
it's good. It
right.
feels great. And he was unloading the truck, going into the kitchen and actually cook,
yeah.
as Ferran and Albert Adria.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, Ferran, at the end of the day, he came to me and he said, Massimo, I just have to thank you
yeah.
because it was 10 years that I didn't cook with Albert together.
Oh, wow.
And you gave us the opportunity to do it. And you know,
it's interesting to me. It seems to me, and I hope I say this right because I don't want it to come off wrong because we just met. But there is this instinct, I think, that every chef and cook I know has, right? You want to feed people. Yeah. You just do. Yeah. It often starts in a home setting. It often starts in a very modest way. It's an instinct, right? Yeah. The further up you go in the restaurant chain, right? The fewer people you're serving, the more exclusive, I'm not criticizing it,
but the more exclusive
it becomes, the more expensive it becomes, the more regimented it becomes. So it seems to me on all these different levels, these people that you invited, right, your peers, a lot of them operate at the same level you do, at the highest level of the industry, right?
Yes.
And here you were presenting an opportunity to A, feed people they're normally not feeding, and B, to shake up their life, right? To take them out of their comfort zone.
I said
that. To have, and probably, look, every cook starts off working really hard, right?
Yeah.
Even the ones now who have empires around the world, they started off peeling potatoes, right?
Most of them.
Peeling
even
carrots.
Even Jiro.
All
9 years old, he was washing dishes.
Right. So they all know what it's like to work, and I think most of them look back at that time in their life very fondly. And it seems to me like you created this, you put them in touch, a lot of them, with what it is that first drew them to what they do.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely that. You know, I said to them, remember, you're going to receive much more than what you're going to give. Because this experience is going to change your life.
Yeah.
And for most of them, you know, like I think Brad Grant from Ledbury in London or Claude Bozy, they wrote me amazing messages in which, you know, they said like, this is the most amazing project I ever been involved in. And I want to share this with all my team, and they keep sending people the team in the day off to cook, you know, in the refettorio in London.
Yes,
just because they want them to be part of this whole experience. You know,
right?
It's just something unbelievable to see all this expression. You know, in London, day one, we didn't know what to expect. You know, it was like not even comparable to Rio de Janeiro.
When was this in London?
5th of June.
Okay, this year?
This year.
Okay.
So we serve 82, you know, homeless. They are living around London. And at one point, a 92 years old lady asked for a microphone. And she said, I'm 92. I'm very, very impressed by the space, by what you are doing, by your project. And I can die very happy now because you create a community. You give a future to a community, you know, in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Since day one, they understood immediately the project.
Yeah.
And Ilse Crawford did an amazing job, like restoring, cleaning. You know, it's amazing. It's beautiful, the space. But the message went through immediately, since day one.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable, touching.
How when you had the idea to do this, how much of a vision did you have, and how much did it evolve just day to day as you were putting it together? In other words, did you have to adapt to what was available to you, to the people who showed up to help, or did you sort of see it, you know, boom, you had a vision of what it was going to be and you created that?
I had the vision.
Yeah.
And no one in the world support me. Really, they were all like, no, come on.
You mean when you first talked to the people at the expo?
When I start talking with people in general, with even my team.
Why?
You know, because they said, universal exposition. You need millions to create something like that, you know. And it was true, you know. But I said, I didn't lose the faith because I thought that was our moment, you know. universal exposition in which the theme was feed the planet.
Yeah.
And it was not feeding the planet as, you know, we were cooking for the planet. It was feed the planet because we were showing how powerful the message was.
Yeah.
Like to cook as my grandmother was doing, you know, not throwing away anything, just asking the right question to the ingredients. To bread that is just baked, 1 day old, 2 day old, 3 day old, you know, you'd have to expect something different.
Yes.
And you have to teach people. So, and then at one point, you know, I was losing faith, and I knock at the door of the church in Milan.
Yeah.
And the Archbishop Scola came to me. He was listening, and he said, thank you very much for your passion and your energy. Can you come back in 1 week? I'm going to give you an answer. And because in my mind, I was explaining the old idea that was to rebuild Miracle in Milan, the 1950 movies, you know, under the train station in Milan.
Wait, I'm sorry, what is this?
It's a 1950 movies from Il Verismo Italiano.
Okay.
You know, this old movie was shot in downtown Milan. Milan,
oh, okay.
Under the train station,
okay.
With the kid that he was flying away at the end, very metaphysical, you know, and rebuilt a refettorio more beautiful than the one that Leonardo did 500 years ago with the Last Supper.
Right.
So, you know, the people, they were looking at me and saying, like, you are crazy.
Yeah.
And then I said, I talked with Cardinal Scola, and then he said, come back in 1 week. And 1 week later, I went back there, and they said, yes, we're going to do it. But from Rome, you know, Pope Francis said, maybe instead of doing in downtown Milan, maybe we should do it in the periphery to bring light to the periphery, as the architects, they're bringing light to the architecture, as the artists, they're bringing light to the place, as you are bringing light to the to the food that normally people think is wasted.
Yes.
So it's like we all have this kind of vision, and we're going to share with the other, and we're going to do it there. So we went to see this space. It's an old theater, abandoned since 15 years, built in 1930. And, you know, we met this amazing priest, Don Giuliano, that instead of talking about the place and the things and what he was doing, he said, look at the train. The train is beautiful. Look, look, it's moving, it's moving, it's moving. It's the future. It's going there.
Yeah.
Let's follow the train. I said, this guy is crazy. He's the right, he's the perfect guy. We need him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was the right one.
Yeah.
He was the right one. And we put all the energy, money, and the old neighbor changed, you know.
Right.
And, you know, after 3 years, you know, you have a new bar there, a new one, some Chinese, they open a Chinese restaurant, a Greek restaurant on the other side of the street. The old neighbor really changed this amazing space. And in the beginning, they were protesting. They were protest because they said we were bringing poor people there.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Right. This is like when someone wants to put a shelter in a neighborhood or.
Dog
eats
dog, you know. It's like, but at the end, you know, 3 years later, you know, the Minister of Agriculture asked me to speak in front of the G7 and all the things. And I said, I can't believe I'm confronting you, guy.
Yeah.
I'm so, you know, I'm nervous because, you know, just about 10 years ago, no one was thinking that the chef could, you know, even get a microphone and speak or leave the kitchen, you know.
Yeah.
Now I'm talking in front of the G7, you know.
Can you talk to me for a minute about this community of people you brought together to this project? Yeah. I mean, this is a worldwide community.
Yeah. Yes.
It includes several of the best chefs in the world.
60.
But I mean the best. I mean the most recognized, the most celebrated. These are people you know. Can you just talk a little bit about this? How over the years have you all gotten to know each other? How does that happen?
That happened, that start, everything start in early 2000.
Yeah.
When, 17 years ago, when we were meeting in the backstage of all these gastronomic congress.
The conferences.
Conferences.
You connect this network to that.
Yeah, like Star Chef, Lo Meor della Gastronomia, Madrid Fusion, Identità Golose in Italy, you know, all these conferences. And, you know, we became friends.
Yeah.
You know, then some journalists organized this and events and things and movement. And we were involved and we were, most of us, we were there. And we became, we start sharing ideas.
Yeah.
You know, think about Cookie Throw. I'm thinking about, many different things. And this is the most revolutionary things, sharing, the word sharing. Sharing ideas, sharing our artisan, our farmers, our cheesemaker, sharing our, you know, time with the other. You became friend.
Yeah.
And we weren't competitor.
Never felt like competition. Yeah. It never felt that way.
No. And we became friends. And we grew up. Our restaurant was growing. And, personally, I had to confront a big, big problem in Italy because they were thinking I was messing up the whole Italian cuisine with my ideas.
This was early in your career. You've talked about this a lot. You got a lot of pushback.
2006, 2007, 2008. Right. And, these guys, they were helping me.
How they help you?
They were like...
publicly or privately?
Taking position.
Publicly.
Publicly. Yeah. And saying Massimo Bottura is not... defeating Italian cuisine is just bringing Italian cuisine in a new century.
Right. And, evolving.
Tradition that need to be evolved through breaking them and rebuild them through a contemporary thought and contemporary mind. And so they were helping me. And as I did with them, when they had problems, like... I need you because you're very well known and respected for a charity dinner in Rockefeller Center for 1,000 people.
Sure.
Of course, I'm coming.
Yeah.
And I did. So we became friends like that. Yeah. You know, we show the world that the chefs, they weren't competitor, but friends, you know.
Right.
One is Nordic, another one is Japanese, another one is classic French, another one is revolutionary Italian, you know. Who cares?
Right.
That, and so the whole movement, benefit of this.
Yeah.
And we grow together, we became very well respected all over the world, and one conference after the other was becoming more interesting and more interesting.
Yeah.
So they start involving us in conferences.
Yeah.
They're not about food, but ideas and creativities and art. And
this is what we were saying before. Yeah. It's grown.
What you do has seeped out so far beyond just food. Yes, but think about that. Right now. In Italy, last year, I received an honorary degree from the oldest university in Bologna about business and, now a university from Tuscany, the Art University, he wants to give me an honorary degree about art.
Yes.
And so it's like, is the all, all these different aspects of what we do can be social, can be artistic, can be simply cooking.
Yes.
It's like we train people, we train young kids and we give the example, we set the example for the young kids. Yeah. So we are setting the example for the future of these of the generation. We are improving, you know, the all gastronomic tourism that is extremely important right now. People are traveling all over the world to have emotion, to eat emotion, you know. Gastronomic tourism. We are improving the agriculture. Now we are the ambassador of the best farmer, fishermen, cheesemakers in the world.
Yes.
Because they want, they understand what we are doing.
Yes.
Then we create culture. Because we keep the culture of every single country alive, you know, rebuilding that culture, you know. And now even social, the social aspect, you know. So it's like, it's unbelievable the the all these different aspects that we are involved in.
I don't know if you'll be comfortable answering this, but just sitting here, we never met before today.
Yeah.
But this, this is a big idea that you had, this project. Your energy, your quickness, you seem to me to be uniquely suited to have taken this on. Like, I think it would be hard to say no to you and to say this can't be done.
You
like,
know,
it seems to me you like your optimism.
Yeah, this is very important.
I feel a lot of optimism coming from you.
I'm very positive.
Yeah.
In my life, I'm
positive. Have you always been that way?
Always been that
way. Yeah.
And I never look at the bad aspect or what they, I don't listen to people.
Yeah.
I just follow my my ideas, you know. I just want to go on. And I think, you know, if you're positive and, you know, you are doing, and you choose to do this job and you're doing very well, as I choose to be a chef and I'm doing very well, you know, the secret is there, you know, do the job that you've chosen to do.
Yeah.
You know, this is a secret of success.
Yeah.
You know, a book, the project is the reflection of a book. You know, the book is something so important, touching paper.
Yeah.
And having a little space for notes.
Yes.
As my mom, you know, when she gave me the Artusi, and she was putting notes on her Artusi book, you know, this is exactly the same, you know, but it's worldwide, you know, exposed. So it's like 10 times bigger, could be 10 times bigger as a potential that is enormous, you know. And I think it's something that, you know, I believe in. And it can be the tool for change and getting better in the managing of our everyday life.
Yeah.
Because when you buy seasonal or this kind of, you know, and you don't waste, you save money, you eat better, and, you know, it's something special, even what you're doing as an action.
So the book, let's talk about the book for a few minutes before we stop. Yeah. First of all, we should say all the royalties are going to the cause.
Not to me, but to Food for Soul.
Right.
So that's very, very important.
Now, did I see you on Instagram holding up the book the other day and saying the goal was 100 refritorios?
1,000.
1,000.
There's a comment. A comment said 1,000. Where are they? Right. You know, I want to volunteer.
Do you mean that?
Oh my God.
Do you really? That is that?
I think. You know. In Brazil.
Yeah.
We went to see the Museum of Tomorrow by Calatrava.
Yeah.
And the projection.
Yes.
You know, we saw the numbers.
Yes.
You know, on food.
Yeah.
Food section. So the numbers, they were right. 860 million people, 1.5 are overweight, and 1.3 billion tons of food are wasted.
Yes.
The projection for 2050 is 23 years. It's not like one century, 23 years.
Right.
So they said that the needy in 23 years, 2050, there will be 400 million. So less than a half. So we are doing right now, here, me and you,
yes,
talking like this,
yes,
because you are transferring this kind of message to people.
Yeah.
You know, we are doing a revolution. We are part of this revolution. And this is a solution, you know. We are the solution as chef. And we are the example with all the for the, all these young generation. They see us as rock stars.
Yeah.
But it's all about hard work, you
yes
know. And we are giving them, and we are giving to people this kind of hope.
Yes.
And the positive energy.
Yeah.
And this is what it is.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Well, this again, this is what makes so much sense to me about it from a chef, because you're able to reach, I mean, exponentially isn't even a big enough word. You're able to touch and affect so many more people. You said it yourself.
Yeah,
how many covers
by
a night?
Myself,
28?
I can't do anything.
No, of course
you know
not.
We are the revolution, because
yeah, through
we
this,
all
through
together.
This movement, right.
Me as a chef,
yeah,
you as a journalist, yes, who transferred that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the people, they are listening,
yeah,
because they are getting the idea.
Yes. So the book, I just want to describe it to people. First of all, it's you know, for someone who has a 3-star Michelin restaurant, this is not a fancy book. It's the scale of it is not very big.
It's beautiful.
It's a soft cover.
Yeah.
It feels very good. It's very,
very
lightweight.
Light.
Feels good in your hands.
Yes.
The photographs take you through. I mean, they're almost like snapshots that anybody,
yes,
listening to this,
yes,
could take.
Yes.
And the paper is, it's not glossy.
No.
This book is meant to go into a kitchen.
Yes.
You won't worry if it,
yes,
gets a little dirty.
Yes.
And it almost has the feel, some of these pages, not that it's funny, but it almost feels like a comic book,
yeah,
in a way.
No, but
it has that kind,
Lara,
of an energy.
No, Lara wrote beautiful stories. She was the witness of all these things that was happening.
Lara is your wife.
Yeah, yeah, my,
yes,
wife.
Right.
And, you know, and it's very funny also to read all the stories behind that.
Right.
You know, that's Renee.
Some of the shit, let's just go through,
yeah,
it. So, but each chef who's in here, you tell the story, and sometimes you're, yeah, like, I couldn't find him, he was,
yeah,
in the barbershop across the street,
yeah,
or,
yeah, that's,
or I didn't know, you know, this guy showed up, we hugged each other, and he was like, what am I going to make with this?
But yeah, that's Daniel Hamm.
Daniel Hamm was,
yeah,
the first,
Daniel,
no?
Hamm, yeah, yeah, was one of the first one.
So the chefs in the book, Daniel,
yeah,
Hamm, obviously,
yeah,
yourself, Rene Redzepi,
yeah,
Yannick Aleno. Who else will people know here? I mean, everybody. John
Mario
Rocca,
Batali.
Mario Batali.
You know,
Peter Nilsson.
Daniel
Patterson. Alex Atala. I mean, it goes,
yeah,
on and on. Matt,
yeah,
Orlando. Gennaro Esposito. 60 in all. They each did a menu with,
yes,
whatever showed up that day.
Absolutely.
And this, the idea is, first of all, you could cook what's in the book, but if you're paying attention, you might see, oh, they did this with this ingredient.
Exactly. We can switch.
I could do that in another application,
yes,
at home. I can,
yes,
make this sauce, or I can,
yes,
do this with whatever.
Totally.
Right.
Totally.
And then you plug that into whatever,
yes,
else you have. That's,
yes,
the idea.
And I use a word that's called everything. Ragu of everything,
right,
broth of everything,
yes,
pesto of everything,
yes,
the word everything,
yes,
has an enormous meaning.
Yeah.
Is the mental palette,
yeah,
that is driving you, is guiding you,
yeah,
to the final flavor.
Yes.
Everything is in the right hands,
yes,
can change the world.
So I have to just ask you on a personal level, you know, we had to talk a minute ago about art. And,
yeah,
you don't think this is an art. But I have to say, I've read interviews with you and I've listened to interviews with you before. You're someone who pays a lot of attention to different cultural pursuits, right?
Yes.
You're into art.
Yes.
You're into music.
Yes.
I assume you're probably into film, I'm going to guess. Am I
no,
wrong?
No. Oh, we did many different shoot, many different,
yeah,
movies.
So,
and a short movie.
So it seems to me that those... As much as food has influenced your life,
yeah,
it seems to me like you would not have become the chef you became without the art, without,
absolutely,
the music.
Yeah,
these,
yeah,
seem to me to be the things that really inspired you as much,
yeah,
as the flavors of,
yeah,
of Italy.
It is
that accurate?
It's totally...
Even if you don't consider
totally
what you,
right,
do to be an art.
It's totally, it's,
yeah,
totally right. You're,
yeah,
totally right. Because,
well,
you know,
mentioned Duchamp a little while ago, and that,
yeah,
to me,
you know,
fits right into what you do.
Yeah, Duchamp's,
yeah,
or Joseph Beuys,
sure,
you know, Ai Weiwei, for example. The whole idea,
yes,
comes from Joseph Beuys and Ai Weiwei. Joseph Beuys is an artist, is like one of the most revolutionary artists of the 20th century.
Yes.
Is we are the revolution.
Yeah.
The every man is an artist.
Yes.
Because, you know. And Ai Weiwei is a very social one who's like breaking a 2,000 years old vase to rebuild it.
Right.
To keep the ashes of that vase that me and Lara, we have home in a jar as the ashes of our past. So if I think and I steal this idea of Ai Weiwei, I have that jar of ashes there to remind me that this is my grandmother, the grandmother of my grandmother, and the grandmother of the grandmother of my grandmother.
Yes.
But this is my past. I come from there. But my mind is there. My mind is is rebuilding the future through all those pieces of the 2,000 years old vase broken down.
Yeah.
So this is what I do every day.
Yeah.
I compress into edible bites my passion.
Yes.
Like music, art, food, sitting of centuries of history.
Yes.
Because I'm Italian.
Yes.
You know? And filtered by a contemporary mind. Right. So my cuisine is really deeply Italian.
Right.
But sometimes abstract.
Yeah.
You know?
So your medium happens to be food.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That all gets filtered into that.
One day, not now, one day I'm sure I'm going to say I'm not a chef. I'm something different. But one day, we'll see.
You really think that?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I was thinking like that because you brought me at this point. So I don't know. There's something that it came out from me like that. You know, who knows?
You think there may be another...
I don't know.
One more evolution.
Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, I use as an expression the food.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I love to break things, boundaries and, you know, the border between sweet and savory.
Yes.
Move my pasta courses into chef, into pastry.
Yes.
Because I always thought that pastry was just something too, you know, too sweet.
Right.
And then not right, you know.
Yeah.
So the experience has to change. And, you know, Taka, that is a Japanese, is perfect in the pastry and not in the pasta courses.
Yeah.
But he was so good in pasta courses. So I said, you get the feeling of Italian cuisine, move to the pastry and create the pastry as a savory, as a ending, the perfect ending of the experience. So it's like... I love to challenge myself and challenge the people that are working with me.
I know you had pushback when you started doing avant-garde things in your restaurant. What about when you were a child, if you don't mind me asking, did you have this sort of nonconformist streak? In other words, were you encouraged to go your own way as a kid, or did it take? Because you started off going. You started going to law school at one point.
I was cooking for as a pleasure in the family. But my brother, he was a very talented chef. He is an accountant, but he was working to make some money in as a macrobiotic chef.
Uh-huh.
You know, like with all these yin yang, all these natural products. So it's like my mom was a great cook. She was. Touching with her, you know, bone, pushing the bone inside the ham, feel it, smelling. She was teaching me to do that and feel if it was age enough. Or she was cutting a little tool to feel the Parmigiano if it was perfect or no. She was extremely, extremely good. So, and she was pushing me to always believe in myself. And,
she was?
Yes.
Okay.
She was the one.
So you had that confidence.
Yeah.
In your
she
own,
was the one
in your own
who pushed me
mind.
To leave the law school and, start as a chef.
Yeah.
She was the one.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad she did. You would have been entertaining as a lawyer, but you would have been wasted as a lawyer.
I know.
Okay. Well, I could talk to you all day, but you have places to be.
I love that.
Thank you so much for making the time.
No, it was a very, very good conversation with an old friend.
Oh, and, thank you.
Yeah, that was very, very charming. Thank you so much. Thank you.
We were just speaking, obviously, with the great Massimo Bottura. The book by Massimo Bottura and friends is Bread is Gold, Extraordinary Meals with Ordinary Ingredients. All the royalties go to the cause.
Yeah.
And it is available now. It is out from Fiden, and I'd encourage everyone to get it. And thank you for listening. Thank you, Chef.
Very good.
Did you all see what happened at the end of that interview there? Or hear what happened, I should say? I got so flustered by Massimo's very sweet compliment that I accidentally signed off in the room with him instead of here in post-production, which is when it usually happens. But that's what it meant to me. Massimo, thank you for joining us, and thanks for your kind words. And David Tadashore, our engineer, thank you, David, as always, for splicing these things together, especially right now when you're doing more than one a week. And thank you all for listening. And as always, if you'd like to follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, you can do that at Chef Podcast is the handle. That's at Chef Podcast. And if you'd like to follow me personally, I'm at Toqueland Andrew. That's Toqueland Andrew. And that's on Twitter and Instagram. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you back next time on Andrew Talks to Chefs. Jesus.